Naturally occurring black pigments in vegetables, spices, and seeds have been found to have powerful anti-inflammatory effects. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I'm excited about what I think may be the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new, all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. Black for Health supports your liver, skin, cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight management, circulation, and immunity. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information, order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuturefarm. Farm, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. A very happy Thanksgiving to all of you listening. And I want to mention that in keeping with the spirit of the holiday, we've got a Cyber Monday sale coming up. I believe that November 30th is a Monday. That's when the sale begins. We're extending it to December 1st. So for that time, you'll receive an extra discount on your purchases at FullScript. Just go to drhoffman.com, click on the store. It'll take you to FullScript. You can sign up there for access to all the wonderful supplements that we talk about here, high-quality professional-grade supplements, the same supplements that I personally take and that you take, Layla, because you use FullScript for ordering your supplements. Mm-hmm. It's also the place where we have our patients purchase their supplements. Because, you know, the Amazon effect out there, there's a lot of stuff, and, you know, some's good and some's not up to snuff. So FullScript,
everything is
personally curated by me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Whereas on Amazon, they've been known to sell things after they've retrieved them from dumpsters. So who knows what you're getting?
So free
I'm not
fire
talking
zone.
Supplements in particular there, but maybe some other thing that you're ordering. It's been known to happen.
Dumpster diving at
dumpster diving at Amazon. Put it on for sale at Amazon. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
On that note, we've got an email from Marianne. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, in this article by Dr. Jason Fung, he references.
For my respect, he's one of the good commentators out there.
Oh, yeah.
You can check him out on the internet. He's really one of these wonky biochemist guys who,
he does a beautiful job explaining insulin resistance. He really, really, really does.
That's his thing. That's really his claim to fame. Although in what you're about to describe, he ventures afield from insulin resistance to cancer causation.
Right, right. So Dr. Fung references that in a study in those who took an increased amount of B vitamins had an increase of cancer. And when I go to this article, Dr. Hoffman, it's about nutrition and cancer.
Yeah.
What causes cancer? You know, the fiber thing was debunked, vitamin deficiencies, all of this. But according to an article in JAMA.
Wait, so they say the fiber thing was debunked. You know, I think I know what you're talking about, but I think, in other words, just merely feeding Metamucil to people isn't going to prevent cancer, right?
Exactly.
So it actually has to be from fruits and vegetables, from real
right. It has to be in the diet. You know, think of certain tribes in Africa where they're eating very unprocessed high fiber food.
Yeah. So it could be the
here,
fiber.
You know,
be
just
the,
by adding more fiber, that's not enough.
Right.
You have to be eating a really good diet.
Right. So it could be all the accoutrements to the fiber, the polyphenols and all that, or it could be the characteristics of plant fiber and fruit fiber.
And a lack of glyphosate.
There you go, too. Yeah.
You know, when we're comparing to hunter and gatherers, hello, mm-hmm. lack of glyphosate, lack of toxins, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So according to this article in the Journal of the American Medical Association, he references this, it's from 2009, that cancer incidence and mortality after treatment with folic acid and vitamin B12 was higher. He says several studies were done, and when the results were analyzed, once again, the results were not good. And those taking more B vitamins didn't get less cancer, they got more. Now, we know it's a bit of a double-edged sword with folate.
Yes.
And in this study, he's talking about folate.
Right.
And B12.
Can I just interject here? Double-edged sword is a really good word for it, because cancer has to do with methylation. And methylation comes from certain B vitamins, particularly folate, B6, B12, and to some extent riboflavin, B2. So when you have inadequate methylation, as in a deficiency, you can have more cancer because there are both promoter genes, cancer promoter genes, and cancer, they're called oncogenes, and there's also cancer preventive genes. And so the trick is to activate the preventive genes without superactivating the cancer proliferation genes. Mm. So I looked at the study that he references there, and there was a slightly higher incidence of cancer in this study in people who took B vitamin supplements, but it wasn't much. It was sort of like, 19% versus 23%.
Yes.
So there wasn't really like some very robust association. And I've been following this a lot. And so, for example, I tell people who are concerned about colon cancer, say they have a previous history of precancerous lesions, or cervical cancer, like they have some abnormal pap smear, I tell them to take folate.
Yes. That's a folate deficiency.
Right.
Yeah.
However, if you have an active cancer, a solid tumor, or perhaps worse yet, metastatic cancer, I tell my patients not to take a multivitamin or a B complex. And I have to sometimes, we have some patients where they have high homocysteine, but they also have a cancer. And I go, I kind of would like to treat your homocysteine and then lower it with B vitamins, methylating formulas. But I'm concerned about your cancer. So, remain cancer free for 5 years, and then maybe I'll come around and address your homocysteine. Cancer patients are in recovery, and we see a lot of them, people come in and they say, I've been treated for breast cancer, I've been treated for prostate cancer, I've been treated for whatever cancer. And then, we have to say to them, don't take vitamins willy-nilly, because we want some targeted ones that target your immune system that have anti-cancer effects, but we don't want to promote the growth of cancer with cancer growth factors, which are B vitamins.
Yeah.
Is that about summing up? I mean, I know that you're attuned to this on the handoff when I send patients to talk about nutrition with you after I see them in the office. But we kind of hold our fire on those B vitamins. But lest this induce a panic and people can say, "Oh my God, I'm taking a multi and I've got to take I'm taking something for my homocysteine and I'm taking
no. Listen, you need some amount of folate. You do get it from your diet. Mm-hmm. These are the people we're speaking to with regard to that, and that's fine. It's the supplemental that may or may not be problematic. So we don't want to take any chances. We're being conservative. Yeah.
And I also want to point out that there have been some studies on looking at homocysteine where people are being given that B vitamin combo.
And yes.
As part of the study, they just wanted to assess, did they get more cancer? It wasn't the primary outcome. The primary outcome was usually, are we lowering their homocysteine and is it reducing heart disease and stroke, which is what homocysteine is responsible for. And in those studies, most of those studies have not shown a higher incidence of cancer. Mm-hmm. But those are people who weren't previously diagnosed with cancer. Those are, it's a controversial issue in nutrition.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a controversial issue. So Marianne's question is, how much is too much? I think it would be appropriate to get blood levels checked.
Mm-hmm. But I have to say, I mean, I see so many people who have high levels of folate or high levels of B12, and then sometimes their conventional MDs say, oh my God, you know, stop taking vitamins, you have high levels. I'm not particularly worried about high levels.
No.
And B6 almost is always high when you're just taking any kind of B6 supplement. So then the doctors get alarmed and say, oh my God, your B6 is too high. It's like, no, it's above the normal limits, but that's because you're taking a supplement.
Right. Right. And we do like to see B12 over 900.
Yeah.
So that's a good number.
The nervous system.
200, yeah. But yeah, 200 is terrible. That's just way too low.
Yeah. We, at the very least 500, you know, I would say. Yeah. Anyway, good point at which to pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message. What say you, Layla?
Okay, here goes.
Let's go.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine the continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions. What's next, Layla?
Oh, we've got a question from Eric. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. Dr. Zelenko says his protocol is 99.7% effective when implemented within 5 days. This is for treating COVID-19. He told Trump and Trump told the press. 8 months later, with 250,000 needlessly dead, and we're still waiting for a questionable vaccine. How do you explain, while the world was in lockdown and people made unemployed, et cetera, while waiting for said vaccine, hydroxychloroquine, a 65-year-old drug that is safe in the outpatient setting, wasn't used? It was attacked by Dr. Fauci, and now it is disallowed in Canada altogether? Is there a big pharma connection? And what say you about the Zelenko protocol?
Well, you know, first of all, I just hate that this whole thing has been so politicized because, you know, once you throw Trump into the equation, everything becomes overheated. And,
yes.
You know, either you're going to get the partisans like this person or the naysayers who feel that nothing associated with Trump could ever have any iota of veracity. Okay. And so the thing about hydroxychloroquine, and by the way, the Zelenko protocol, there are a lot of videos and, you know, this is done a lot through social media and not really vetted through, shall we say, proper scientific channels, you know, like with well-designed double-blind placebo-controlled trials. But, you know, he has experience.
But is there time for that?
Yeah. When things in the spirit of let's be pragmatic, I mean, I think it's great to look at the experience of individual doctors like Dr. Zelenko, who's been apparently very successful in keeping patients off ventilators and preventing them from dying and preventing them from getting into the hospital. You know, I think the things he's not just using hydroxychloroquine. I presume he's using zinc and vitamin D, maybe melatonin, maybe aspirin, maybe, you know.
Maybe a Z-Pak, something like that.
Yeah, Z-Pak, right. Some people have proposed the use of ivermectin, which is a treatment for river blindness. It's an anti-parasite medication that may, you know, have similar antiviral effects or anti-inflammatory effects. We don't know, but these things do seem to help. In my opinion, hydroxychloroquine has some bona fides, and I would take it personally if I came down with COVID-19 in you know, but I think it mostly works if you get it early.
Yep.
And you know, I personally have among my patients, it seems to help. It seems to help. By the way, interestingly, knock wood, none of our patients have really come to harm, you know.
Yes, true.
You know, with this, not that many of our patients have come down with it. So, you know, what I can say is...
And any that have, I can think of a handful, have recovered nicely.
Yes, yes. That's what I mean. Right, that they've, they've fared well with it. You know, they had relatively benign courses, even some of the older ones.
Yes.
So, you know, is there a big pharma conspiracy? No, there's not a big pharma conspiracy. But is there a tremendous incentive to look for expensive solutions and profitable solutions? I mean, this is sort of the natural inclination of our medical system. However, I'm not one of these people who poo-poos these vaccines. They now have a third vaccine, which is the Oxford vaccine. And, you know, it's amazing with these vaccines. It's like, well, first one was 90% effective, then one was 94.5% effective, and then another manufacturer said, here, hold my beer, 95% effective.
Yeah. You know? Now, I understand two of those are RNA.
Yeah.
And one is not.
Yeah, they're... I think they're mostly the RNA platform. I looked at the Chinese vaccine. There's also the Chinese vaccine, which they've already, I mean, they don't have like any kind of restraint like we do about, you know, once they think something works, they just line up the populace and give it to them. And the Chinese vaccine is, it's not an RNA vaccine. It's an attenuated viral material. It's more like, I think, an old-fashioned type vaccine where they kind of kill the virus and then administer it. You know, let's talk a little bit about the vaccines. The vaccines do have side effects, and side effects are mostly mild. You know, people feel kind of under the weather. You know, we'll have to see how that pans out when we give it to people and what the acceptance will be of that side effect, but the one is given a couple of times, and usually the first time it doesn't really make you that sick, but the second time, you know, you can feel body aches and fever. That's going to be an issue.
It's like when a lot of people get the flu shot, they get the flu for a couple of days, or that's how they describe it.
Yeah. Or nothing. You know, it just depends on the individual.
Right.
So we'll have to see. I mean, I'm not against this vaccine, but I just think we need a lot of transparency and we need some
informed consent.
I'm sorry? Yeah, informed
consent.
I think there was a question about whether the vaccine will be mandatory.
Yes. Actually, we've got two questions, Dr. Hoffman. Sure. One is, should I take the COVID-19 vaccine?
Right.
And also, will vaccines be made mandatory?
Okay, well, the answer is, first of all, it's kind of moot because the average person won't have access to the vaccine. At first, it may be as late as late spring or early summer before the vaccine becomes generally available for everyone, because it's going to be prioritized for the people at risk. And this is actually kind of a difficult process, is to try to ascertain who is really at high risk and who should get it. Now, for example, to say everybody over 65, I mean, I personally, I'm 68. I don't think I'm particularly high risk, and I would be willing to give my place up to, you know, a 49-year-old person who is overweight, diabetic, and hypertensive. You know, that person would be at high risk. So age per se is not a risk, although it is relative risk.
Yeah.
There is this thing called immunosenescence, which is that you get older, your immune system tends to weaken, but it's not inevitable. It's more a consequence of the condition that you're in and the comorbidities that you have, the, you know, whatever medical conditions you have. You know, so it's going to be there's going to be a trickle down effect of, you know, who's going to, when it's going to be generally available. You know, I think it's going to be quite a few months before there'll be signs in front of the, you know, CVS pharmacy saying, get your COVID-19 shot here, you know, for come one and come all, you know, you can all get it. So the other question is it going to be mandatory? And I think that there are some governments that may make it mandatory. And this is whether it's on a state level or a national level. You know, we're going to have to see. That's going to be a real civil liberties thing. And I don't think that's a good idea, because that's going to increase, I think, resistance and distrust of the vaccine.
Yes.
I also think that we can achieve quite a lot by getting maybe 40% of people vaccinated, because between the 40% of people who are vaccinated and, you know, the 15 or 20% of people who've been infected already, some, you know, have had asymptomatic infections, but they show antibodies, you know, it's going to put quite a stumbling block into the viral progression. So yeah. I think we can have a successful campaign, even if it's not universally picked up. What is a little disturbing is Qantas Airline announced today, I read the papers, is going to become the first airline which is going to mandate that you have a COVID-19 vaccine before you do international travel.
Wow.
And that's how they're going to get you. It's going to be like, okay, well, I want to go back to university. Okay, you need the vaccine. I want to get on a plane and fly to Paris. Well, I'm sorry, you need to have a vaccine certificate. I want to have my child enrolled in school. Well, I'm sorry, you'll need... That's where the compulsion will come in.
Yeah.
You know, the there's going to be some suasion to say, well, okay, if you don't want to take the vaccine, fine, but, you know, stay home and you can't go anywhere.
You know? Which is terrible.
Yeah.
Which is just so terrible.
Yeah. We're going to have to, that's going to play out in various ways, and it's going to be a big controversy this year.
Yeah. Here's another question. I hear HEPA filters capture particles 3 microns in size, but the virus is 1 micron.
That's a little bit like the argument against masks, is that masks are, you know, mesh, basically, if you look at them closely enough under a microscope, and that they do have holes in them. And the virus can penetrate. So, but that doesn't mean that masks are completely useless. They may be somewhat effective, but they're not 100% effective. As you know, doctors in hospital who care for patients, they know that these cloth masks or these regular surgical masks are inadequate. So they use N95 masks that are carefully fitted, and sometimes supplement them with shields, sometimes with like space helmets. You know. And that's how you really protect yourself. So
it reminds me of when I went to the dentist a month ago. It was almost like a hazmat suit they were in.
Yeah. Well, some of that is for real, and some of that is theater, you know. it's to reassure you, you know, as well as to protect them and you. So The HEPA filters are very effective, and what they do is they'll suck in the air in the room and recirculate many times during the course of a day. And they use HEPA filters in planes, and they use HEPA filters now more and more are being introduced in schools. The problem with the HEPA filter is that it creates a great deal of drag. You know, say you want to retrofit your air conditioning or your home heating unit with a HEPA filter. It's really blocks a lot of the airflow.
Yeah.
So you need a really powerful fan or motor to pull that through. And many systems are not yet ready to accommodate HEPA filters. So there's something I think that's short of that called a MERV filter that's like about, you know, instead of 97% effective, it's 80 some percent effective. That is more porous, but doesn't require as much force to, you know, suction the air through it. But you can also get a portable HEPA unit and put it into your office or your business or your room, and it will do some good because it will pull some air through. And, you know, think of the HEPA filter as a series of baffles. You know, it's kind of like a maze. And even if the virus gets in there, you know, it's got to get through the whole multi-layers of that. Eventually, it's going to get entrapped inside there.
Yeah.
We had a question about eggs, big news this week.
Apparently, there was a study this week that says eggs cause diabetes.
Yeah.
Now, Dr. H, before you respond, about every year around this time, maybe because it's National Diabetes Month, Is this the same old study rearing its ugly head again about eggs cause diabetes? Is it the same one?
No, it's new.
It comes out.
It's in a different guise. And this is one of these kind of, you know, eggs are good for you, eggs are bad for you, eggs are good for you, eggs are bad for you.
Right.
It's one of the big controversies in nutrition. I personally believe that eggs are perfectly fine and do not cause diabetes. I'll tell you what's wrong with the study. In the press, they have headlines like "Go over easy on the eggs," "Excess consumption." That's a pun. Linked to diabetes. Get it? Excess. Okay.
Yes.
So they said that in the study, only at least one egg per day in this study saw risk increased by 60% of diabetes.
I would question, what did they have with that egg? Did they have toast and juice and
You're
and
exactly
potatoes?
On the right track. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
Study done in China, 8,500 Chinese adults were tracked between 1991 and 2009. Now, some interesting things have happened in China. You know, we saw this with the China study. The China study says, you know, meat and dairy are bad because there's a much higher rate of cancer in China. Well, they use data, you know, over 30 years. China's had an enormous leap forward in terms of their food supply, less starvation, more obesity, very high rate of obesity and diabetes in China now because they have more labor-saving devices, they do less manual work, and they're not starving, okay?
Yeah.
This has happened fairly recently. So they say in China, those that ate the most eggs, at least one egg per day, saw their risk increase by 60%. But, you know, it was only in women. And by the way, egg consumption, much of the egg consumption was associated with eggs that you get in pastry and in processed foods.
Oh, forget that.
Okay, so it wasn't like people who, you know, have like, you know, like a veggie omelet, you know, carefully prepared with extra virgin olive oil. It's, I mean, eggs as a marker for prosperity. I mean, it used to be like, it was such a like a luxury to get an egg in China. Like, oh my goodness, like handle those carefully. I've got like three eggs here, you know. But now it's like they have industrial production and they have a lot more food. And so the rich people can afford and consume eggs. And they also consume a lot of other crap, you know, processed food.
Yeah. And that's what they need to be looking at instead of zeroing in on eggs.
Yeah.
Many of these studies are also funded by, you know, vegan groups or vegetarian, you know.
It's like the China study. You know, the China study was cited by vegetarians.
And it's been debunked.
Yeah.
And you've debunked it yourself, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah. We talked about it. I mean, this is kind of like the new China study, but it's the China egg study. And it's faulty methodology. It's also recall methodology. You know, they do these recall, dietary recall things. And like, who knows, you know, what they really consume. But the Chinese are eating less, you know, vegetables and less whole grains and they're consuming much more in the way of ultra-processed foods, of which eggs are a part. And so eggs per se are not the problem. It's just the dietary excess and the refined foods that they're consuming. Correlation is not causation. So there's a yes.
Right.
You know, also, I mean, other things happening in China is they're so much more polluted than they were. The study started in 1991. So what were you doing in 1991? You know, it was like, that's like 30 years ago. 30 years ago, China has become much more polluted, much more sedentary lifestyle. So is that are the eggs the cause of the problem? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've gone a little bit over, but I wanted to give you a generous helping of Thanksgiving fare here.
Yes.
So you've gorged yourself intellectually, so now proceed to gorge yourself physically. We'll be back next week with more. Radioprogram at AOL.com is the destination for questions. And I want to thank you, Layla, for making yourself available during this holiday week.
Oh, yeah. This is great fun, Dr. Hoffman.
Indeed.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
We enjoy it.
Yeah.
Cyber Monday. Look for a sale at drhoffman.com. Click on the store. It'll take you to FullScript. And there you'll have access to many of the supplements that we talk about here at great prices. That's November 30th and December 1st. Check it out.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This holiday season, don't miss out on your chance to stock up on your favorite supplements during the Cyber Monday sale at my online FullScript supplement dispensary. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. November 30th through December 1st, for 2 days only, get 10% off and free shipping on my entire inventory of top supplements at drhoffmanstore.com. We stock only the highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere. The very same supplements I prescribe to my patients and take myself. It's the safest and most convenient way to purchase my curated supplements. Buying through FullScript offers fast, free shipping and refill reminders via text or email. It's safe, secure, and includes world-class customer service. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for 10% off and free shipping for 2 days only, from November 30th through December 1st. That's drhoffmanstore.com.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.